should I say bonjour, bonsoir. That's right. Welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. My name's Kate Borsay, and joining me in the studio for the opening ceremony of our podcast is its former Arsenal, Chelsea, Reading and current Watford and Wales striker Helen Ward. Hi, Helen.
Hello, how are you?
Welcome along. We're so pleased to have you with us and with Helen, a man who knows this studio very well. In fact, so well, I found a pair of his dirty socks in here last week. From the Totally Football shows and commentator for Chelsea TV Talksport and everything else in between, the man who doesn't stop, it's Matt Davis Adams. Welcome.
Hi, Kate. Thank you. I'm glad it was just the socks that you found.
God, what else is there? What else is there to come in this studio? I shall have a forage around under the desk later, do a bit of a clear out. We'll make sure you're following us on Spotify, ready to listen to each podcast as it drops. Every game day, there'll be a fresh one, sparkling and new. And keep across our Instagram and Twitter feeds for bonus content. You'll find them at Offside Rule Pod. OK, let's go to Paris. Well, it was a very confident start from France, winning 4-0 against South Korea in this opening game.
Il y a aussi le sommeur qui arrive.
Oui,
il y a le sommeur. Il y a Eugénie Le Sommeur qui arrive dans cette surface de réparation.
Like a fine milfoy, I've written here, just to add some Frenchisms in. They show that there are many layers to their side and are most definitely sweet on top. Some delicious moments of play. Look, two goals from legendary defender Wendy Renard after Eugénie Le Sommeur struck first at just 9 minutes in. The pièce de résistance, a superb finish from captain Amandine Henry to round things up.
Oui, oui, bien sûr, Amandine Henry. Bien sûr, Amandine Henry pour le quatrième but.
Well, South Korea 100-1 outsiders versus the 7-2 favourites, Matt. You could tell, couldn't you?
Yeah, you sort of felt that South Korea needed to get at least 15, probably 20 minutes in the game before they conceded. But what was so disappointing from their point of view was we'd kind of built them up as this defensively solid, rigorous side, and the marking from set pieces and France had countless corners in the first half in particular was kind of non-existent. And the goals for Renard, she didn't have to work hard enough to get them. You know, 6'1", you'd think, OK, we need to get as tight to her as we possibly can. And certainly one of them, she had a clear run at it and it was a free header. So that will really stick in the craw of South Korea, I think, that they just didn't get it together defensively. In a game where they would have known that they were going to spend a lot of time defending their own goal rather than going forward, that aspect of the game they needed to get right, and they just handed it to France, essentially.
Helen, if they were suffering from stage fright, South Korea, you'd sort of forgive them, right? The opening game for France, so much buzz surrounding this tournament. But also France, from early on, laid out their intentions. They were strong, they were direct, they were forceful and so confident as well, weren't they?
They were, and there's so much pressure on this squad this time round. It's a home tournament. They've been expected to do well at major tournaments, you know, in the last three or four that I can remember, and they haven't quite delivered. So there was an awful lot of pressure on them. So the early goal, or goals if you include the one that was disallowed, would have really settled them down. Never really looked troubled. There was a one moment in the second half, but the game was already done by then. That they just looked really, really confident. Everything about them said that they were here to make their mark, and they certainly did that. I've tipped them to be, you know, go deep into this tournament, especially as a host nation, and they've done nothing tonight to prove me otherwise.
Your take on France, Matt, and their confidence, but also it looks like they've got great depth as well, doesn't it? So many key players there, and they seem, I mean, it's only the opening game, but they seem to be working together.
Yeah, and, you know, there's four or five players who had really good games. We mentioned Renard already and Henri, the captain, but Cascarino on the right wing in the first half particular was exceptional. And for as poor as South Korea's marking was, the set pieces was so varied from France, it was actually quite difficult to pick them up. So it's obviously something that they've worked really hard on, which they deserve praise for. I just wonder if your initial reaction is to think, well, this is the absolute perfect start for them, but maybe they've kind of set a benchmark that are they going to be able to maintain throughout the tournament? You know, they've won 4-0, restricting the opposition to a shot 70 minutes into the game. That's not going to be sustainable throughout the tournament, but certainly the people in the Parc des Princes will probably be expecting them to match or exceed those levels as the tournament goes on. It's going to be tricky for them to do that.
Let's look at some key players for them. You mentioned in terms of perhaps a young star coming through who might not be first on everyone's list of the French team that they recognise. Delphine Cascarino looked energetic, young, bright, certainly looks sparky out there as well. Has a twin sister who plays football, by the way, Estelle, plays for the other team in Paris, so not PSG. Dad's a screenwriter and had actually published a little cartoon in one of the French papers with "Boot" written on it, depicting a goal by his daughter as a good luck message to her. And actually, Delphine won the Under-20s World Cup in 2016. So she's obviously got that experience behind her. And you could tell because for such a big occasion, she didn't look phased. In fact, I don't think there was a single member of the team who looked phased.
Yeah, I mean, it helped that she had an accommodating player up against her, and they quite quickly started doubling up on her, actually, and even that didn't do much to slow her down. But obviously, the instruction from the coach has been, you know, get the ball to our forward players who are going to do the damage for us. And certainly, for players like Cascarino, no better way to start the tournament, really. I mean, that's a really nice story about her dad, but I think we're all a bit disappointed it didn't turn out to be Tony.
Apparently, she gets asked a lot, both her and her sister, whether they're related to Tony Cascarino, because he played over in France, didn't he? Who did he play for?
Was Marseille.
Did he play for Marseille? Mm. A couple of clubs over there. So we like the look of Delphine. Wendy Renard, we've already mentioned her as being a huge force, most popularly billed as the tallest player at 6'1" here in the tournament. Who else do we like the look of?
I mean, you obviously have to look at Henri Lhomme. They just ooze class. They're coming into this tournament late 20s, early 30s, and the time that you'd expect them to be peaking. They certainly seem to be doing that. I think it's hard to pick out individuals, really. The whole squad looks so talented, and they look really together. The way they celebrated that last goal, they got everybody off the bench. They just look like a really tight-knit group, which I don't know has always been the case with the French national team. There's been quite a lot made of that, but whether that's been a priority of theirs to get that togetherness, they know they've got the talent, so that could be the final percent that makes all the difference for them, and having that home crowd behind them. So it's, yeah, I actually thought the right back, Torrent, you have to excuse my French pronunciation, I've never done French, not even at school, so but she looked really good down that right hand side, and linking up with Cascarino, they caused the left-hand side of South Korea all kinds of problems, especially in that first half. So I think that will be something for, you know, the rest of their group to look at and really nail down that left side of the pitch defensively to stop them, because they were a constant threat. And I think probably 70% of the attacks came from that right-hand side. So it's definitely a point of interest for them.
VAR, it could have been 5-0, couldn't it, Helen, were it not for our first glimpse of VAR at this tournament?
Yeah, VAR's come into play very early. Thankfully, it was the only time in the game that we saw it. It didn't seem to interrupt it too much. Very, very close call. If I'm scoring that goal, I'm disappointed that my big
toe... It was a toe, right? A toe.
It was. Yeah, fantastic finish. Really disappointed for her, to be honest. It would have been a lovely moment for her. But, you know, at the end of the day, the decision looks to be the right one. That's all you can ask from VAR. Maybe speed it up a little bit, get the decision a bit quicker. But, yeah, you can't fault it so far. You know, 100% record of decisions being made right, it seems.
Grigion Buck with an audacious side kick. It would have been a great goal, wouldn't it? Well, Tim Stillman of this podcast, we're going to be speaking to Tim quite a lot during the tournament, said after that decision, once more with feeling, this is not what the offside rule is for. I like that link with us as well. Thank you very much, Tim, for that. Gutting for Mbok, though. Matt, do you agree with Tim there?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a bit of a Luddite, to be honest, but I'm just not a VAR guy. I feel like life is not perfect, is it? So why should things on a football match be? You know, if your big toe is a little bit offside, well, that's just the way the breaks go. But that's not a popular opinion, and I understand people want the correct decisions for everything. And I do get that, but I just think it kind of, especially with women's football, where, you know, what we see in the WSL, where it's not in big Premier League stadiums that are all VAR ready and everything like that. It's just taking the international game far away from the domestic game, because you've got this massive thing which can be applied in one section of it and can't be applied in the other. And from a TV viewing experience tonight, we got one replay of that, and I think we all thought, oh, that's onside, they'll give the goal. Mm. And then probably 2 minutes later, we got the replay that the VAR officials used, which had the lines on it, which showed that it was offside. And so it was quite an sort of unsatisfying TV viewing experience to have to wait that long for it. And imagine if you're in the crowd as well. We had 2 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the first half, and I don't think there was a foul other than that. So it was, for all that, it's a long time to stop the game for what is essentially, you know, a couple of inches offside and a goal that didn't really affect the game. Obviously, if it's one that happens in the World Cup final, it's totally different. But yeah, it's just not for me, really.
It takes that emotion out of it as well, doesn't it? The raw emotion of scoring a goal, the crowd, the players, everybody's so excited to then line up ready for kickoff, only to have to go back down the other end to take a free kick. It's disappointing, and we've seen it in games recently, you know, in the men's side, that adrenaline that you have, you almost don't want to celebrate as a fan because you're not quite sure if you're doing the right thing and you don't want to look too silly when your goal gets disallowed. I'm really torn by it, to be honest. I don't know if I like it or not.
Don't let Matt wheel his evil VAR doubting way. But yeah, gutting for Mbok, especially when it was a goal like that. I think that's when VAR hurts, doesn't it? Helen, is there anything positive that South Korea can take from this game? Several of the players are in the Hyundai team, and safe to say they never really got a chance to get motoring.
I like that. The second half, you have to give them credit. They made the game a bit dull from a viewer's perspective, but you know, they're not there to win fans in that sense. They're there to win football matches. But obviously the damage was done in the first half. But if they can shut up shop a little bit more like they did in the second half, then against the other teams in their group, it's going to hopefully pay dividends for them. They've got a player in Ji So-yeon who is one of the best in the world, but you wouldn't have even known she was on the pitch. She could have been sat on the bench for all we knew. She just wasn't allowed to get into the game. They mentioned in commentary that when you've only got one player of that quality, then it's easy for the opposition to kind of mark you out the game. But I don't even think it was a case of her being marked out the game. Korea just couldn't get on the ball. They're renowned for their possession, but we didn't see any of that today.
Also the captain Cho, who plays for West Ham, we didn't really see much marshalling from her, did we, really, in terms of trying to get them to produce something. Well, Opta Joe's given South Korea a bit of hope with this stat. France's 4-0 win over South Korea is the biggest win by a host nation in their opening game of a Women's World Cup since China defeated Norway 4-0 in 1991. In that year, Norway went on to reach the final before losing to the United States. So there we go. Where there's hope for Norway, there could be hope for South Korea. All right, well, joining us on the phone all the way from Paris, having made her way through the commentary on that brilliantly, former England international Sue Smith, currently of the BBC, and also an offside rule favourite as well. Sue, thanks for coming on. I've got to ask you about the atmosphere in that stadium.
You know, the atmosphere was fantastic. I thought it was going to be. I'd spoke to Lucy Bronze when she went over to Lyon and sort of said, like, what are the crowds like? What are the fans like over there? And she said they completely get behind the side. You know, if they're a Lyon fan, they support the men's team, they support the women's team, they support the younger teams. So she was saying the atmospheres in the stadiums, especially when France are playing the home side, are going to be tremendous. So I was looking forward to actually experiencing that and seeing if that was the case. And it certainly was, you know, from the first opening ceremony to right the way through the game, they were continually cheering their team and supporting their team. And I thought they were fantastic when the actual South Korean national anthem was on, and they obeyed it absolutely perfectly. You know, it was completely silent, and then they sung out their own national anthem. And yeah, it was just fantastic and great to be part of that opening game.
Yeah, and it was a sold-out crowd as well. Of course, the official attendance, just over 45,000, so near capacity in that stadium for the kind of officially sold-out game. Lots of Katy Perry playing when there were goals, lots of chanting going on as well. Tell us, though, how the French performed under potentially quite a lot of pressure. The opening game, lots of expectation on them. We're all looking to see if they're gelling as a team, if they look like world champions. What did you think?
Well, pressure, what pressure? You know, they completely performed how you would expect a winning team to do. And you know, in my opinion, they're right up there with one of the favourites, or they are one of the favourites to go on and win the whole tournament. It's always difficult that opening game, whether you're a favourite, whether you're in your own country, because you've had such a build-up to the competition. You've had all your friendly games, your warm-up games, and this is the first game. This is and nerves do play a part, but they didn't seem to from a French perspective. They started the game really strong. They completely dominated it. They looked strong defensively, despite South Korea not really offering too much going forward. And they've also got a real strength in depth. I was looking at their bench and I was seeing players that they can bring on, that they can change the game with, different quality. You know, you've got your strong physical players, you've also got your quick players. You've got your players that can take players on with those moments of magic. And I just think they've got everything. And yes, that was a big question mark, wasn't it? Will they be able to gel? What will happen if maybe things start going wrong? And I think that's something that we've obviously yet to see in that game, because that was a completely dominant performance. But what happens if they go a goal down? You know, will the start being finger pointing? You know, will that great camaraderie, that chemistry that it looks like they've got, what will happen then? So I'll be really interested to see if they do go behind, or if things do start to get tough in a game, how do they respond? So I know Karim Diakra has been, that's been something she's wanted to get the team gelled, the chemistry there, the camaraderie there. It looks like they're enjoying their football, but it's great when you're winning.
Mm-hmm, sure is. Well, I guess time will tell. Not a true test, perhaps, on how that French team are going to do throughout the tournament. What was it like commentating on VAR? First time out, of course, at a Women's World Cup. And Sue, it was you who had to take us through it.
It was, and unfortunately, I got it wrong. I thought that it was onside. I think from the naked eye, I think everybody...
Oh, everyone did, yeah.
...watched it on TV, yeah, thought that it was onside. So I wasn't on my own, thankfully. But as soon as they put the line across, you could see that I think it was probably a toenail that was offside. But it was the correct decision. And I think that's what's so good about VAR, that we do get to the correct decision in the end, the majority of the time. Just took a little bit of time. That's the only thing that, you know, I've been a little bit frustrated with VAR in the past, and it was the same in this game. But you want it to be the right decision, especially if it's, you know, such an important game. So, yeah, interesting, but good fun.
But as a sidebar to this, the big question, did the locals know the game was on? You may think I'm jesting, but with tennis's French Open also underway, has FIFA's big build-up to this tournament translated to ground level in Paris? Well, The Guardian's Susie Rack says sadly not.
I wandered round the Gare du Nord station for quite a while looking for any sign. There was zero. I'm told that there were two small posters at the airport by a ticket machine for the metro. And dotted through the metro station, you know, just as you kind of go through the tunnels around the station, there's posters advertising the two men's team games in September. If they weren't there, you maybe wouldn't have noticed. But the fact that they're there and the women's aren't, it just kind of makes it more noticeable.
Mm. So do we think that the French are talking a good game, but when it comes to actually producing the goods, backing it, making sure that it's marketed properly, it's not happening? And is it a local organising committee thing, or is it a FIFA thing?
I think it's a bit of both. The fact that Infantino said yesterday at the Women's Football Convention, or at the FIFA Congress, one of the two, when this issue of there not being really much visibility was raised, he was surprised by it. He's been in the city, I'm assuming, for more than a couple of days, surprised by the lack of any visibility, and said, oh, we'll get on it, this is not acceptable. But then, yeah, the local organising committee, we challenged the CEO of the local organising committee at the opening ceremony press conference on it, and he was extremely dismissive of the idea that you kind of would put up posters to build an atmosphere and to let people know that this is in town, and was very much like, well, you know, our energies are focused on filling the stadiums and getting as many broadcasters as possible. And then boasting about them having sold out 20 games. 20 games is less than one a team.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's 52 games.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's actually that impressive.
No,
We're on less tickets for Canada at the moment. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it all feels like they're over egging the pudding and underestimating how powerful a physical presence and making people want to feel a part of something is.
Well, that's today sorted. Saturday brings three new matches, Germany versus China next.
On Gio, Kate and Co, this is producer Ben reminding you not to forget that the Nations League is also happening, and your Totally Football team is out in Porto covering every kick. We'll be back on Sunday night to see whether Portugal or the Netherlands will walk away with international football's newest trophy, and whether England can pip the Swiss for that prestigious third place finish. The only place you can hear us is on Spotify, so search for the Totally Nations League show and follow us to subscribe. Like this show you're listening to, it's totally free. You don't need a premium account or anything like that. We're also posting photos, clips and pay-per-views while we're out here in Portugal, so head to @thetotallyshow on Twitter for more.
the Germans' powerhouses of old, but it's fair to say not quite so much now. It's a team full of stars. Wolfsburg's powerful striker, Alexandra Popp, who's become such a useful all-rounder for the team, and not just on the field, by the way. She passed her zookeeper exams recently. Well done to you, Alexandra. Helen, you've watched Popp up close, haven't you?
Yeah, when I was at Arsenal, we played Duisburg in the Champions League. It must have been around 2010. She was about 19. She played as a left back, which was a bit odd, but you could see then I was sat on her side. I was on the bench and I was sat down that side of the pitch in the first half. And she just looked so strong and so powerful at such a young age. She was up against Gemma Davison, who's obviously quick, powerful herself, and she couldn't get a sniff out of her. And I thought, this kid looks very good. And obviously she's gone on to do amazing things. She was a big miss for Germany in the Euros last time round when she missed it through a knee injury. But yeah, she's an incredible athlete, very strong, great finisher. She can do everything, really. And I think she's obviously going to be a massive part of this German team, who I expect to do quite well. They've not been fancied recently, and I think they could... Can't ever underestimate the Germans, of course not. But I expect them to do well in this World Cup, and she'll be a big part of that, I'm sure.
It's important, really, for us to see whether that Germany side's moved on after going out in the quarters at the last European Championships and having a poor She Believes tournament as well. Matt Marajan, playmaker for Lyon, so important for this side as well. I can't believe she's still quite young, isn't she? How old is she, Helen?
27, I think we just found out. Yeah. Which really surprised me, to be honest.
Me too, because it feels like she's been around for ages. But this is great for the German side. Just tell us a bit about Marajan and why she's the name, along with Pop, really, that people keep mentioning.
Well, she plays for Lyon, for one thing, which is always a sign that you're pretty good. She made her debut in the Bundesliga when she was 15. So she's generally considered one of the best midfielders in the world. I would say it's her and Simon, isn't it, who are the only players in the Germany squad who don't play in Germany, and they both play for Lyon. And you'd think that they're, particularly in midfield, they'll overwhelm China and probably Spain as well, just on the basis of Marajan as much as anything else. But it's a good game for Germany to start with, because they've played nine times, these two teams, and Germany have won all of them. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about whether they're in transition / crisis, but this is the ideal opener for them, I would suggest. And if I open up my big book of commentator cliches, under the letter N, we've got never an easy place to go, not what they would have wanted, nobody saw that coming, and never write off the Germans. So you think if they win this game, they're in a really good position to get through. But yeah, Marajan certainly is going to be key for them throughout the tournament.
OK, well, they are up against China, early investors in the game, but it will be tough for China, that's for sure. Well, for more on this fixture, we spoke to everyone's favourite karate kicker and the woman who's going to be covering it for the BBC. It's Robin Cowan, currently in position in Rennes.
It's going to be a really interesting game, actually, because Germany are definitely a team in transition. They've lost a couple of managers now, and they've got one, Martina Voss Tecklenburg, a former legend, well, a current legend. I shouldn't retire her from legendary status, but she won over 100 caps as a player. She's played in three World Cups herself. She won five European titles, but this will be her first competitive game as a manager. She was appointed in April 2018, but she was actually manager of the Swiss side then. So she guided them through qualifying. They didn't quite make it to the tournament. So she's had four friendlies under her belt. So this is really the acid test to see if they can put that poor last tournament 2 years ago behind them, where they really like they lost their way, Germany. So it'll be really interesting to see how they do.
How did they lose their way, and what's changed since? I mean, is there anything that we can pin this on in terms of whether they have moved on or not?
I think they've lost a lot of very, very big players. So the Nadine Angerer, who was there at the last World Cup, an absolute pinnacle of why they won it twice. They've also lost Melanie Behringer and many others, Anya Mittag, just really big legends of the game. So they've really had to... I think Martina Voss Tecklenburg has had to dip into the younger players. So you've got three players who played the under-20s World Cup last summer, who she's brought through. They all look very promising. So it's all about bringing through the next generation. I also think the general feeling was that the appointment of Steffi Jones was a bit of a mistake. It just didn't work for her. I think she was a bit too inexperienced. It's a huge job managing this German women's team, and she just didn't quite get to grips with it.
So that could set them back a few years in terms of international tournaments. And I guess this will be a first test for Germany. Or will it, though? How much of a test will China be?
I think they could be very tricky opponents. We saw France against South Korea. They've really laid down the mark of France. South Korea, disappointing. And although this is another Asian side, I think we're going to see China be a bit more organised at the back. And they also have two very good threats up front in Wang Shuang, who is the only player who plays abroad for PSG, and also Wang Shanshan, who has scored 24 goals in their last 23 internationals. So they've got a bit more of a threat up front. The only thing is, I think perhaps like South Korea, they may struggle against Germany from set pieces because they're going to be, in terms of height advantage, it's going to be restricted. And I think Alexandra Popp is pretty enormous for Germany and she will put her head where it hurts. So I think we may see that might be their downfall of China. But they've also got good World Cup pedigree, China. They've only missed one tournament. They've hosted it twice. So it's a tournament that they really enjoy and the country gets behind. So yeah, it's a really interesting opening game.
Well, that match is a 2 o'clock kickoff UK time. Build-up to the Women's World Cup has been dominated by the absence of a certain Ada Hegerberg. Can the Norwegians get off to a good start against the Nigerians? That's next. So the second kickoff of the day, this one, Norway versus Nigeria. Well, the expectations for Norway, well, getting out of the group, that's the minimum amount expected of them. But really, they are a nation whose football currency has fallen somewhat. Getting beyond the quarterfinals will be tough for them. And Euro 2017, a complete fiasco. They failed to score a single goal there, but they did beat the Netherlands in qualifying for this World Cup. Matt, what are your feelings on Norway?
Obviously, the Hegerberg thing's taken a lot of the headlines, but she's got quite a capable deputy, is probably not the right word, but Isabel Herlufsen, who's got 57 international goals and has been playing up front for Norway for many years, made a debut in senior football when she was 16. And they've also got really strong defence, haven't they? I know Doris Dottir and Mjelde have both missed a lot of the season for Chelsea injury-wise, but you'd certainly, given the other teams in the group, you'd fancy them to go through, maybe not as group winners, and that's where it might get a little bit sticky for them. I just wonder if Hegerberg, having watched the game tonight, you know, 45,000 people in the Parc des Princes, I respect her and admire her for sticking to her principles, but this feels like it's going to be the biggest Women's World Cup ever, and it's a massive decision to miss out on it. And I know she's not been playing for them for a while, but will she come to sort of rue that when she looks back on her career and thinks that she could have gone into this biggest World Cup ever as, you know, voted as the world's best player? And yeah, she's not here.
Misses the world's biggest stage. Well, the debate's still going on in Norway. We're reliably informed. And she's spoken recently about how she quit the national team in Norway after being left mentally broken and suffering nightmares. So we're getting a little bit more insight in here. It was always billed as kind of an equality argument. But a lot of those issues have been resolved with Norway now. So now we're getting into the mental side of it for her. But her comments have really angered Norway international and Real Madrid midfielder Martin Ødegaard, who said on social media to her, maybe you can find something better to do than destroy the national team's preparations for the World Cup, basically saying that's really bad timing. That you choose to do an interview, he said, like this is completely incomprehensible. The timing's terrible. The choice not to play for Norway is yours, but respect Norway and our national team. It's enough now.
And he thinks that's going to help, does he?
Yes, exactly. He thinks a full-scale spat is going to help. Helen, let's talk to you as the player here. Look, she's a huge player for them. She's a special, special talent. She's either massively stubborn or she's really been hurting. You know, she's actually come out and felt like she's had to justify it.
Yeah, I think she must be hurting because for anyone to step away from their nation. And, you know, as you said, she's been voted the best player in the world. She's so huge for that team. To step away from that, it must have been a really gut-wrenching decision. So for her to come to that decision, there must be something going on deeper than just the equality and the financial and, you know, whatever else has happened sort of from the outside point of view. from a Welsh point of view, we played against her in the qualifiers for the Euros and she was sensational. She really was. And, you know, I kind of hope that she doesn't come to any sort of change of heart in the next couple of years as we've drawn them again. But it is disappointing to watch a World Cup without, you know, the best players. And that's the stage you want to see them on. So I do feel for her. I really do. And I can't imagine she wants to cause any issues for those that are there. I'm sure she's still got a lot of friends within that squad. But she's made her decision and fair play to her. She's stuck with it. She hasn't just come out of, you know, she hasn't changed her mind just because, oh, do you know what, I should be on that stage. She's sticking to her guns and you have to respect her for that. The comments from her Norwegian compatriot, they're unnecessary, aren't they? They don't need to. He doesn't need to come out on social media right now and do that. He might disagree with it, but give her a call. I'm sure he can get in touch with her if he really wanted. He doesn't need to make it a public spat.
Will Norway come up against Nigeria and Asisat Oshoala? Fun to watch, and there's a reason why she's been named African Footballer of the Year 3 times already. She's fast, she's got those tricky feet and body movements, and really matured, I think, into an excellent player. We saw her in the Champions League final for Barcelona, and although it really wasn't the result that Barcelona wanted, she did manage to get a goal. But you can't just count on outscoring your opponents, can you? Nigeria have got to get their defence sorted for this one.
Yeah, they're wildly inconsistent at the moment, Nigeria. They've fluctuated between victory and defeat in each of their last 7 since they won the African Cup of Nations in December. And they're dominant in that competition. It tends to be a problem for them when the step up in quality comes, you know, when they face European teams or North American teams. So, yeah, that's something they've got to sort out. But I love Oshoala. I love players who have just the most random career paths, like from Nigeria, then you go play in England, then you go play in China, then you go play in Barcelona. Just like the most amazing life experience that must be. Interested to see what she can do on this stage, because I don't think she's going to be carrying a team necessarily, but they're going to be heavily reliant on her to sort of bring the form that she had with Barcelona at the end of the season into the World Cup. So big pressure on her.
So Norway versus Nigeria. Norway have had a tricky time of it. Nigeria could do something exciting, but will they, Helen?
My heart says no. I think Norway will probably be too savvy, too strong. Oshoala, obviously, as you've mentioned, she's full of pace, she's full of tricks, but I don't know that they'll have enough in the rest of the side to really do too much damage in their group. I do fancy Norway to come out of this situation a lot better than perhaps some are expecting them to. They have got some good players and, you know, some good young players as well in forward positions that I think will go on, and I think they'll come out the group.
Well, to wrap things off with Saturday's games, Spain versus South Africa. We'll run over this one quickly. Spain is their second ever World Cup and South Africa are debutants to this tournament. Well, last time round in Canada, Spain were knocked out at the group stage without winning a game. So it wasn't a great tournament for them. And I think perhaps just a learning experience. Will it be the same for South Africa in this tournament, Matt?
Quite possibly, but it feels like there's a bit of a kind of feel-good factor around South Africa. Obviously, really tough draw. The other 3 teams all in the world's top 20. But one of those teams who are just glad to be here, you know, if that's not too patronising. And that said, they were hammered 7-2 by Norway last weekend in a warm-up match. So difficult for them. But this game, I think this could be the game of the day, because both teams will see it as a really good opportunity to get a win on the board. And, you know, it might be that a win gets you through as one of the third place teams, even if not as second. So it should be really open match. This first time they've ever played each other, actually, Spain, South Africa.
And there's a big Barcelona contingent in the Spain squad as well, with ex-Arsenal midfielder Vicky Lozada being one of the 10 from the Champions League finalists named in that squad. Helen, give us your thoughts on this one.
I fancy Spain to do well. I love the way they play. They manipulate the ball so well. They link up really well together. And I think, as Matt said, this game for them will be an ideal opportunity to nail down that style of play and try and pass their opponents off the pitch. It's just whether they've got enough then to end those moves with goals. But again, it's probably in that group, you'd say that's the ideal opening fixture, as Matt said. And yeah, I think they'll go on and win that one quite comfortably.
Well, that wraps up Saturday's fixtures. Let's check in with Lindsay Hooper. She's out in Nice getting ready for the Lionesses' first match on Sunday. We caught up with her before things got underway to find out what she's up to. Lindsay, you're in Nice. How's the weather, first of all? Because it's important for me to appreciate how much sun you're getting and how awful it is here.
Are you sure you want me to keep telling you about this?
Yes, please.
It is lovely. It is beautiful weather. I think we're in the late 20s. However, it is a little more windy today. If I'm after any sympathy at all, it's for the breeze and the fact I've had to put my hair up about six times.
How inconvenient. And have you stumbled across any more rooftop bars?
No more. There's a lot, though, along the promenade here. It seems to be a very in vogue thing in Nice to have a rooftop bar. So there's plenty for people to stumble across if they're going to come out here and support the Lionesses. They can get on a rooftop bar, I guarantee them. What they might hope to do better than me is get a better grasp of the language in French, because I went out into Nice Old Town today. I needed a new suitcase. And you know me, I break things all the time.
Why did you need a new suitcase?
Oh, well, I had a moment just 15 minutes before coming out here where I thought I'd got everything in my case. I hadn't sat on it yet and I couldn't close it. So I had to use a really old one, which is only fit for purpose, really, for the skip. So I went out to go and buy one, parked the car and was trying to remember where I'd parked.
Wait, sorry. Are they letting you drive in Nice?
Yes. Luckily, I had company with me,
right?
Because I always need another pair of eyes.
Yeah.
And she said, like, do you remember where the car park is? And I said, I know for definite it began with the words OU, something like au vert. And she said, well, that means open, and they all are. So we're going to be a long time.
Massive clanger. Did you find this car park?
Yes. I managed to save
your skin. We've had Sue Smith on in this podcast, and she told me earlier that she'd tried to order a tuna salad and got it completely wrong and ended up with a completely different salad. But luckily, it was quite nice. So there's lots of you trying to get to grips with the language, which you just should have concentrated at school. You really should. Tell us what's been going on with the Lionesses as they prepare for the big game against Scotland.
Well, straight into it now. They've had a couple of training sessions already, one which was open to all media for 15 minutes. So we got to see them up close and adjust into all this heat in Nice that you keep liking to talk about. And then they had a closed session. So they must have gone through tactics for the Scotland game, really got down to business. And you know what? One of the things that was really visible was just how involved Phil Neville gets. He really does. He was giving lots of instructions, working them really hard on the bits that we saw. And then, yeah, who knows what they did behind closed doors. And then he's been really generous to them. I mean, he said this before coming out to the tournament, that he's going to give them the freedom. And when they need to work, they need to work hard. When they don't need to work, they can go and see their families, their friends. Lots of people have got people coming out already. One of the things that I have done with a few of them already is some artwork. So if you're on Instagram, they've actually posted, Leah Williamson posted some of the artwork. I got them to draw each other. I can't work out most of them, so we'll see how they get on as I start quizzing them. But Leah Williamson seemed to enjoy it. So if you're on Instagram, go and have a look.
Oh, brilliant. So you've been encouraging Leah Williamson to tap into her creative side. I like it very much. Lots of videos floating around on Twitter, actually. And in one of them, they asked the girls to describe Phil Neville, and a lot of them said dad. Carly Telford said boring. So I don't know if he's been mithering them or not. Do you get the sense that he's giving them a bit of a break because some of the younger ones might be a bit overtired? Might they be a bit kind of wowed by the whole thing, and it's important for them to take a step back from the whole World Cup thing and enjoy the environment?
I don't think so, actually. I think this is about the fact that they came out here a bit earlier. So Scotland actually arrived a full, I think it was nearly 36 hours after England. So they had pretty much a day and a half head start here. So they got to work a little bit earlier. And I think Phil's recognised that, and he doesn't want to overwork. I think whatever they did yesterday must have been quite full on. And today he just wants them to take stock. And of course, tomorrow will all be about, I mean, as it is for most teams, isn't it? The day before a match, they go and get acquainted with stadiums, and they do those tours. They get to know the pitch a little bit better. And I'm sure they'll be doing lots of that as well tomorrow. And they've got the press conference as well with Phil Neville in the evening.
Right, we're going to sign off now. You are probably going to go off to get a cocktail somewhere, are you?
I'm actually going to get a coffee.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go coffee first, cocktails later.
Lovely. All right, well, enjoy.
Come on, you know this.
Okay, well, that's it for episode one. France kick off their tournament with a 4-0 win against South Korea. In the meantime, as ever, make sure you're subscribed and keeping up to date with us via social media. We're on @OffsideRulePod everywhere you go. And our website, of course, with match reports and insights into the Women's World Cup, offsiderulepodcast.com. Matt and Helen, thank you very much for getting us kicked off with this exciting run of a tournament, and tons more episodes to come from us. And I know we'll be seeing both of you again, I'm sure. We'll be back next time to discuss match day two and look ahead to match day three, which sees the big one. It's England versus Scotland.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.